Dave from New Jersey. It's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out over Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
And I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
Darren! How
John,
you doing?
John, how are you,
Feels
fella.
Like it's been forever since
it's
I've
been,
seen you.
I haven't seen you since the war. Oh, the olden days.
It feels like a long time because I had like a very eventful weekend.
You were out and about.
I was telling you about this before we started recording. I drove out to Baltimore this weekend for the Baltimore Comic Con. What is Baltimore's nickname? Charm City. I went to Charm City.
I thought they were called, wasn't it called like Murder Capital or something?
I don't think they advertise that as much. No, I mean, I was a big fan of Homicide: Life on the Street. So, yeah,
gotcha.
I do associate Baltimore with lots of murders.
I thought they had called like Bulletmore, Murderland. Something.
Bulletmore, that's catchy.
I could be wrong. I don't know. Somebody, Stringer Bell, holler at me and let me know what you call it. Let me know what it's actually called.
But anyway, I went to the Baltimore Comic Con, which I mentioned last week, and I had lots of fun there.
Yeah, far out. How was it?
It was cool. I moderated some panels. I met Jonathan Scheck from That Thing You Do, which is one of my favorite movies, which I just found out you have not seen.
I shamefully have not seen That Thing You Do. Yes.
I am publicly shaming you on this.
Oh, and as soon as I said that, you looked at me like your whole perception of me changed.
I know you would love that movie. From what I know of your taste, I really think you would like that movie. Yeah, I don't want to oversell it, but
yeah, I mean, I don't know why I just haven't seen it. Just like I just saw the trailer, I was like, oh, that looks cute, and then I just never saw it. It didn't grab me. But if you're saying it's going to grab me, I will let it grab me.
I think it's going to grab you, and I also think a little bit less of you as a person now.
That's fair.
Yeah. But you know, it's a fun movie. It's sort of, if you're a Beatles fan, you will like that movie. And if you're a Beatles fan, you will like the movie that we are talking about today. I am so good at transitions.
Segway King.
This week we are talking about the television movie The Ruddles, All You Need Is Cash, which is a Beatles satire, a Beatles parody.
Yes. A mockumentary.
Yes, a mockumentary. Done before Spinal Tap.
Yes, came out in March 22nd, 1978.
That's right. And it sort of originated, it has an SNL connection.
Yeah, the film was written by Eric Idle and directed by Eric Idle and Gary Weiss. Mm-hmm. Or Weiss.
I think it's probably Weiss.
Who is Gary Weiss was the director at Saturday Night Live.
Yes, yes.
Oh, and it's also produced by Lorne Michaels, this film.
Yes, yes. And it has bit parts from a lot of the original SNL players.
Right, right. Aykroyd's in this. Mm-hmm. Murray's in this. Radner.
Belushi.
Belushi.
Franken and Davis.
Yeah. Frankie and Dave.
And
Frank and Dave.
Yeah, this had an interesting origin. This was Eric Idle. He was doing a comedy show in the 70s called Rutland Weekend Television, which was like a parody. Rutland is like the smallest province in England.
Oh.
And there was a guy who was on the show, Neil Innes, who would write songs for the show. Oh, and then sometimes Idle would write sketches around the songs, or Innes would write songs for the sketches.
Right.
You know, so they'd sort of inspire each other in reverse that way. And he wrote this one song called I Must Be in Love, which sounded really Beatle-y.
Oh, okay. That makes
sense.
And so they said,
well, let's do a Beatles parody. And they did they called themselves the Ruddles because it was Rutland Weekend Television. And
so
that was what it was. So instead of John Paul, George, and Ringo, we had Dirk, Stig, Nasty, and Barry.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool
names.
Which was fun. And yeah, and this ended up with Idle showed this clip from Rutland Weekend Television when he hosted SNL sometime in like 77 or 78. And they decided to expand it out into like a full-length special.
Okay, so all the guys that were playing the Ruddles, they were from the original.
I watched the original clip this morning. I found it online. Okay. And it was mostly the same people. It was still Neil Innes as Nasty, the John Lennon type character.
Right.
We had let me get the cast list.
Well, Eric Idle was Dirk, of course.
He was Dirk in Dirk the McCartley. Final movie, but he was the George equivalent in the original Rutland Weekend television sketch. And
Dirk McCorkley and Barry Wom, who was the the Ringo Starr.
Yes.
Whose full name was Barrington Womble.
Yeah, let me get the the cast and the crew up here. We had John Halsey as Barry Wom. He was in the original sketch.
Oh.
And in the TV movie, we had Ricky Fattar as Stig O'Hara, who is the George Harrison equivalent.
Oh, okay.
And a funny thing about this movie, I think, is because George was the quiet one.
Right.
And he was the one who got into the Indian mysticism. We have an Indian guy playing.
Yeah, I noticed that too. It's like
the part of George, and he has no lines in the movie.
I noticed that too.
It's he like, never speaks.
Yeah, I mean, he sings when everybody else is singing. But
right.
Yeah, the guy that plays the George Harrison equivalent, Stig O'Hara, he doesn't say anything in this entire movie at all,
and it's never commented on. It's It's just a nice subtle joke.
Yeah, it's like one of those things like I didn't get until like after the movie. I was like, oh wait a minute, oh I see what they did.
Yeah, yeah, and you don't really notice it until they.
Well, they call him the quiet one, and yeah. Barry was the noisy one.
Yes, yes, yes. So if you're any kind of Beatles fan, you will really love this movie.
Right.
I think the more you know about the Beatles and their history, the funnier you will find this movie, because
absolutely.
It really references and parallels their careers.
Absolutely. I mean, well, as far as the Beatles go, how deep a Beatles fan are you? Are you like a huge Beatles fan?
I know this is a radical statement, but I really like the Beatles.
Whoa!
I think they were a really good band.
Wow!
Yeah, yeah. No,
controversial.
I know. I'm taking a stand. I really love the Beatles. I really dig their music.
Yeah.
I
dig their groovy tunes.
I know they were groovy. They were fab.
Yeah, right. Right on.
And you know they call the Ruttles the prefab.
Prefab
four.
Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, I got into the Beatles. I'm a huge Beatles fan too. Mm-hmm. Like I got into them kind of like a roundabout way. Like growing up, I knew about their hits, and mm-hmm. I always thought they were fine. I think like when you were a kid, like you just kind of grow up hearing these oldies hits and just kind of don't really listen to them. But then at their I got into them more like in college, because like in college I was listening to more like classic rock and more mm-hmm. alternative rock. And then I was huge into Beck at the time. Like I really loved Odelay, Midnight Vultures, and Mutations and all that. I was like, oh, this shit's amazing.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of hack, but like I really got into the Beatles through when I listened to Sgt. Pepper.
Mm-hmm.
And then like I listened to it, and there were a couple songs in there that was like, wow, this kind of sounds like something Beck would do. Or like,
oh yeah,
this is like, I think it was especially that end where it's like all kind of these noisy nonsense sounds.
Yeah,
like, after A Day in the Life.
Uh-huh.
It's like, oh, this sounds like Beckish. But then I went back and then I listened to Revolver, and then especially that's the last song, Tomorrow Never Knows.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, yo, this sounds exactly like something Beck would do. What these guys were making all this type of music.
They ripped Beck off 30 years early.
Right? It's like, I hope Beck made a call about this.
That's funny.
But yeah, then I just got more and more and deeper into the Beatles, like, you know, Rubber Soul and, mm-hmm. you know, Hard Day's Night and, you know, Get Back and, you know, all, you know, Let It Be. And then, like, I was just a diehard fan.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's great. I mean, the Beatles are one of those bands that pretty much everybody loves.
Yeah. I feel like there are some people that say they don't like the Beatles, but I don't know. I feel like people who do that are just trying to be like cool and different when they
like. I'm an iconoclast.
Yeah,
I don't like the Beatles. I actually had a couple people at my last job who were like, "Oh no, I don't like the Beatles. I think they're bad." And I was just like, "Really? Really?
What's wrong with?"
It was kind of like, you know, you saying, oh, I haven't seen that thing you do.
Yeah.
I was like,
I don't own a TV. Wait, look, hey, man, I genuinely haven't seen the movie. I will watch that thing you do if it will repair our friendship.
Okay.
I don't want this to be divide us.
You know, like Tom Hanks, he's hosted SNL a lot. Maybe that could be our tangential connection.
Yes. Yes. Fine. 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 But yeah, when people say they don't like the Beatles, like, I always, in my back
you,
my
you
head,
like them a little less, right?
Yeah. It's like, dude, whatever band or musician you think is better than the Beatles, I can guarantee you that person loves the Beatles.
Yeah.
So get off your high horse.
Yeah, exactly.
You dumb bitch. I say that in my head, I don't.
You dumb bitch.
Man or woman, I say that.
But yeah, it's just a little weird. The Beatles are just a given, and like, I mean, I was born like, well, after they broke up.
Right, right.
But, like, the Beatles are, like, always around.
Yeah, they're just...
You know, you just grow up with them. So even though I wasn't around for Beatlemania, I still...
You know of them. Like, the songs play on the radio. Like, the music is just...
Still love the Beatles. Got all the albums.
Yeah, me too.
You know, watched the movies.
Yeah, Hard Day's Night, Help.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Actually, I don't think I've ever seen Let It Be. The one where in the studio and where they're breaking up and all that.
Yeah, you see I remember seeing that, like, and you sort of saw some tension between, like, Paul and George, where, like, they were, like, kind of.
Yeah, you know, I'll play whatever you want, or I'll not play, you know, whatever you want.
I just want to play.
Well, George, no, I didn't mean to, you know.
Then what have you got?
Yeah.
Yeah. Woo. But, yeah, I haven't seen Let It Be. I don't think I've seen that in a while. But yeah. Us big Beatles fans.
Yeah, we enjoy the Beatles. I know it's a hot take.
But, pro Beatles.
Pro Beatles. SNL nerds, pro Beatles.
Yeah. So like when I was watching this movie, like you see like a lot of, you get the references a lot more. It's like, they're talking about this. Oh, the Rat Skeller.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, really, it parallels the Beatles career path like pretty accurately.
Yeah, I mean it was a difficult thing to do because you gotta like condense the whole history of the Beatles in like 1 hour.
Yeah, I mean it's a pretty short movie overall. I believe it's like
70 minutes.
Yeah, 70, 75 minutes, something like that. 1 hour, 16 minutes. So,
So you can knock it out real quick. Oh, also, this thing's on YouTube. You can watch it on YouTube.
Oh, is it? I didn't realize
that. It is on YouTube. Yeah.
That is cool. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So, yeah, definitely we recommend the movie. We're gonna talk a little about the movie. And there's, of course, interesting trivia surrounding the movie. And
yeah. Well, I mean, one thing you notice that Eric Idle, he plays like the sort of the narrator of the whole film,
right?
And he also has like a few multiple appearances.
He plays.
Well, I mean, of course, he plays Dirk.
Yeah, he plays multiple roles. And that Eric Idle, you know, he's one of the Monty Python gang.
Yeah.
He would traditionally play multiple roles in television shows in very quick succession.
Right.
And so it's cool. You see how versatile Eric Idle can be.
Yeah, very, very much so. And you know, he's also the narrator, and he's sort of telling the story about the Beatles. And of course, it opens with like a tracking shot of like him walking along the sidewalk, and like the camera moving, and he's talking about the Beatles, and then caught the camera moves a little bit faster and faster, and he has like run to catch up to the camera until basically the camera is like on the back of a truck, and it just speeds away while he like runs after.
It's leaving him far behind. And that was Eric Idle said like one of the initial gags that he came up with for this. He did that in the initial Ruddle sketch on Rutland Weekend Television. You know, of course, he was like doing it down at British Street. They reshot it for the SNL special.
So like a lot of stuff from that Ruddles.
It was just a quick thing. Like I watched the segment. And it was like a 9-minute segment, and it grew out of a sketch that they were doing about it was people who had come down with love as a sickness. And it was talking about them going into the hospital and being afflicted with love.
Oh.
And then from there, it transitioned into the Neil in a song, I Must Be in Love.
I feel good.
Yeah.
I feel bad.
I feel happy. I feel sad. Am I in love? Ooh, I must be in love.
Yeah, I tried to do that too, like throughout the movie, trying to figure out what song they were parodying. Like I must be in love. It sounds like a bunch of different Beatles songs.
Yeah,
it's not just one.
It's interesting. Neil Innes, he wrote like a bunch of songs for this. I believe it was like 14 on the original soundtrack. Well, it was like a few songs that appeared in the special were not on the soundtrack originally, but they expanded it later. So now you have like 14 tracks on the soundtrack. But they all sound really Beatly, and they're roughly parallel to certain points in the Beatles' careers.
Right. Like when they perform for the Queen, they sing the song like "With a Girl Like You." That sounds a lot like "If I Fell in Love with You."
Yeah,
and of course, I mean, "Ouch!" Of course, is help.
It's help, but they sound very close, and they duplicate the sound, but they're not like note for note parodies. It's not like a Weird Al thing,
where
it's just the same song with comedy lyrics. They sound close, but they're not explicitly parallel.
Yeah. They switch it up just enough that you know if you didn't have like a really sensitive ear, you'd
yeah, that and there was actually a lawsuit concerning this. Yeah, they sent this is interesting. They sent the songs for approval over to the Beatles. John Lennon, He loved the special so much, he refused to return the videotape and soundtrack he was given for approval. But he told Neil Innes that the song Get Up and Go was too close to the Beatles' Get Back, and to be careful not to be sued by ATV Music, who owned the Beatles' catalog at the time.
That's cool. Give him a heads up.
And so that for that reason, they didn't include Get Up and Go on the... on the soundtrack, but it is on there now. But and that is probably the closest sounding one. That sounds really close to
that. Does sound a lot like. But I also like another thing I liked about this movie is like as far as like wardrobe and looks go, they pretty much get it exact. Like with the when they did the rooftop performance on Get Up and Go, they were wearing pretty much the exact same outfits that the Beatles wear on their final live performance.
I think they were in the same location, or they were at least in a location that looked very, very close to where the Beatles did the rooftop concert.
Right, right.
Which I think that was just at the top of the studio or something like that.
Yeah, it was the top of Apple Studios, I believe.
Or the Abbey Road Studios, maybe?
I believe so. Yeah, it was Abbey Road, maybe.
Okay.
I think so. But you know, instead of Abbey Road, they called it Shabby Road.
Yeah, yeah, they're like that. Yeah, they are. There's wordplay throughout, and they do a nice job with duplicating the looks with the wigs and the wardrobe and all that.
But yeah, it was good stuff. And I mean, you also have like a lot of Monty Python humor within this.
Yeah,
like one thing I noticed, like they talked about the fifth Beatle with a guy named Leppo.
Yes, who's a friend of Nasty's from art college, and he's like the parallel to Stu Sutcliffe.
Right, right.
Who was the original bassist in the Beatles and then left early on.
Right, and it said like Leppo, he couldn't play guitar, but he knew how to have a good time. And in Hamburg, that was more important.
Yes, yes.
Like a lot of like quick little like Python-esque lines were littered throughout this movie.
And the interesting thing is the fellow who plays Leppo, Ollie Halsall, he's identified as the fifth Ruddle. He was the fellow who provided the singing voice for Eric Idle's character of Dirk McQuigley. So that was them giving him just a little cameo in the movie as like a little tip of the hat.
Oh, nice.
Everyone else does their own singing and playing.
Oh, no. So the guy playing Stig and Barry, they're like musicians.
They were actual musicians as well as actors.
That's what I had a feeling
actors.
About that, because I didn't recognize them from anything else, but like, and I looked up them up on IMDb, and it just seemed like they were just musicians, and not actors at all.
Yeah, the fellows who were the Ruddles, they got together later in the 90s. In 1996, they did an album called Archaeology, which was playing off the Beatles' anthology.
Oh.
And they did some other... Beatles-type songs and also some old Neil Innes songs that they gave like Beatles-esque treatments to.
Okay.
And that's interesting. I wouldn't say it's as essential as the original soundtrack album.
Gotcha.
It doesn't like parallel the Beatles stuff as closely. But, you know, it's a fun bonus.
Okay. I hear you. Oh, and another character that was in this movie, Leggy Mountbatten.
Yes.
Who I guess he was like their George Martin.
I took him as more as their Brian Epstein.
Oh, you know, you're right.
Yeah, because they talk about how he sees them in the equivalent of the Cavern Club.
Right.
And they're talking to Leggy's mother, and they're like, well, what did he like so much about the Ruddles? What did he like their music? And she's like, oh, no, he hated their music. Well, what did he like about them? Well, they had very tight trousers. They were quite tight. They left nothing to the imagination. And it's, oh, yes, I see. And he's trying to move on quickly. And he's like, oh, you could see everything.
But yes, okay.
And later they're talking to another fellow about the Ruddles, and they were like, well, I love the trousers, of course.
Oh, yeah, Dick Jaws.
Yes.
I love the names used in this movie.
Like, yeah, this. Yeah. That actor did a really nice job, Dick Jaws.
Dick Jaws.
That's just a great name.
It really is.
Dick Jaws. It's just fun to say. Dick Jaws. And he's like, well, I love the trousers, of course. Of course. I've been in the garment industry, and I'd seen some inseams, and these were smashing. And it was just so much fun. That was an actor called Barry Cryer, according to IMDb.
Right.
He was really good. I believe he was like a British comedic actor. But Leggy Mountbatten also wrote a book called A Cellar Full of Goys.
Yeah.
And the real life Brian Epstein wrote a book called A Cellar Full of Boys.
Oh.
Talking about like the original Beatles and how he
See, that
discovered
went,
them.
That went right by me. Shit.
It's like, yeah, you can go deep with this stuff, man.
Yeah.
Like George Harrison actually let Eric Idle see a lot of footage from a film project called The Long and Winding Road.
Right.
Which was just like this documentary film project about the Beatles. And it eventually became the Beatles anthology, the TV documentary that came out in like the 90s. But this was like in the mid to late 70s, so a lot of people hadn't seen this footage. Ooh. So he's actually parodying stuff that hasn't been seen
no
by most
knows.
Of the general public.
Yeah, so people are like, I don't know, I guess. I don't know.
It was kind of funny.
Speaking of George Harrison, I didn't even notice that he was in this movie until like the credits came on.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, what? And then I rewound it back. I was like, oh yeah, of course
Yeah.
It went right by me. Well, George Harrison's in this film.
Yeah, George Harrison has a fun cameo. And he's made up as another interviewer.
Right.
And he's made up as to look like an older guy. He's got a fake mustache, glasses, and grayed hair.
Right.
Which the real life George Harrison did not have at that time. Right. And
he's interviewing Michael Palin, who's also in this thing.
Yes. Ex Python Michael Palin. Well, I guess he's still a Monty Python. Once you're in Python,
you're in. That's right.
You're a Python for life.
If you're a jet, you're a jet all the way.
Yes. he appears like later in the movie. And also Ron Wood from the Rolling Stones shows up as a punk rocker.
Yeah, we have two Rolling Stones in this film because Mick Jagger gets interviewed throughout this whole thing.
Mick Jagger is in this film getting interviewed about the Ruddles. And he's obviously basically just talking about the Beatles with the names changed.
Right.
And Jagger has this grin on his face throughout the whole thing. Jagger is having the time of his life.
He's in on the joke.
Yeah. He's just like, oh, well, you know, we're got to have the Ruddles write a song for us because they were known for the hit-making potential ability. And, And they sent us a song, and it was rubbish.
Yeah, it was terrible.
We never did it. We never recorded it. Jagger is so funny in this movie.
He gets a lot of play in this thing because they go back to him quite a bit.
He's having a ball.
just Jagger being Jagger.
Mm-hmm.
And also Paul Simon's in this thing too. He's one of the talking heads in this.
Yeah, which he goes back with Lorne Michaels a long way. He's been a long time friend of his, and it gives it some verisimilitude where they're talking about the. The
what
Ruddles.
What the fuck did you say?
It's very believable because you have those real musicians talking about the fake musicians in the Ruddles.
Verisimilitude. I need a minute.
Verisimilitude. I know that because of the Superman the movie. That's a long story. But
I was like, you floored me with that. I never.
I love that word. It's a fun word to say. Verisimilitude.
All right. Well, somebody took their SATs. All right.
Yeah.
Fancy fella.
but we also have Bianca Jagger in this, who is Mick Jagger's wife at the time, I believe. I'm not sure when exactly they were married. I remember more when Mick Jagger was married to Jerry Hall the 80s. But she plays Dirk's wife, Martini.
Oh yeah, I like this.
And you see her, you see like sort of a romantic sequence between the two of them, and she seems more or less indifferent to Dirk.
Yeah, that's the fun. I mean, that's towards the end of the movie where they say, in March of 1969, things had gotten so bad within the group that Dirk and Nasty got married.
Yes.
Like two women, not to each other.
Yes, yeah.
And then they say Dirk married a French actress who spoke no English and precious little French.
Yes.
It's like, again, and, like this little Python line.
And they have Nasty getting married to their Yoko Ono equivalent.
Oh, Chastity.
Chastity. And they dress her up as a Nazi.
Yes, because Chastity was a simple German girl whose father had invented World War II.
Yes. And
she was an artist. She was in the pretentious gallery.
Yes. And it's such an audacious bit of parody.
It really was.
Yoko Ono, not well liked by Beatles fans. A lot of Beatles fans believe that she was the one who helped break them up.
Yeah, that's a thing.
She and John were so into each other. They were around everywhere. Like John insisted that she be in the studio with them because he didn't want to be apart from her, or he didn't want someone else to steal her away while he was away making music.
And I mean, people still say to this day when a woman comes in between a band and their members, it's like, oh, it's a Yoko.
I mean, they cut to Jagger and they're like, well, what went wrong with the Ruddles? And he's just like, women. screwing it up, getting in the way, you know. And it's like, it's so amazing because, like, Jagger is probably being much more frank than he would be
right
in a real Beatles documentary.
But it's shrouded underneath the whole, oh, no, I'm talking about the Ruddles.
It's under the guise of comedy.
What are you talking about? Beatles? No.
But you think you're probably getting a little closer to the truth or his real life opinions.
You're hitting closer to bone.
Because he can be more outrageous than he would be.
All right. So, yeah. So, Mick and Bianca were married from 71 to 78.
Oh, okay. Okay. So this is like tail end of their marriage,
tail end,
I guess.
Yeah.
And the amazing thing is the woman who plays Chastity, Nasty's wife, the Nazi lady, although they never actually say she's a Nazi, but she's
wearing Nazi.
She's in an SS uniform and wearing a swastika. She basically looks like Hitler without the mustache.
If it walks like a Nazi and talks like a Nazi,
yeah,
it's a Nazi.
But the amazing thing is the woman who played Chastity was the same actress who played Leggy Mountbatten's mother, Mrs. Iris Mountbatten.
They look totally different.
Gwen Taylor, amazing, versatile actress. I would love to. She apparently was a big British sketch comedy person, and I'd love to see more of her work, just judging from what she did in this movie. Because those two characters, they don't look alike, they don't act alike. I was amazed when I first found out that it was the same person playing both parts.
Yeah, it's pretty fantastic. I saw that in the credits. I was like, whoa, I'm floored.
That's great. I mean, everybody in this movie is very funny. I don't feel like there are any weak links.
No, everybody's pretty strong. I mean, we also have SNL nerds. We also have like a SNL cast members. We have Bill Murray playing this sort of drive time DJ, Bill Murray the K.
Yeah, and there was a real life DJ, I believe, called Murray the K, who was like a big Beatles booster, and he's like credited with increasing their popularity in the U.S.
Oh, they just went with Bill Murray the K.
Yeah, they just called him Bill Murray the K, and it's just like a quick thing. You just hear, it's just Bill Murphy riffing into a microphone. He's like, "The Ruddles are coming here, and they're bringing their trousers."
Yeah,
and they probably just like gave Bill a couple talking points, and then they're just like, go.
Yeah. I mean, I like that scene too, because like it's the Ruddles, you know, during Ruddle Mania, where like they're running away from all their fans, and you know, of course their teenage girls are like beating up cops to get to them, and of course the cops are like, I was assaulted by all these girls. But like at one point they're listening to the radio and they're hearing Bill Murray talking about the Ruddles are gonna be here in Flushing, it's Ruddle Mania.
Yeah.
And then you see Dirk and Nasty look at each other like, do you know anything about this? Yeah. I didn't hear anything.
Well, I don't know about that, you know. Ooh, and they really capture the playfulness that you see in the early Beatles stuff, like at their press conferences or in A Hard Day's Night, where they're just like, I don't know about this.
Ooh.
You know, this guy seems a little sketchy.
Yeah, exactly. Like the little playful goofiness of
the Beatles had those smart-ass answers in their press conferences, and they show a little of that. They're like, oh, did you feel good after seeing the Queen? Right. And they're like, no, you feel good after seeing the doctor.
So charming.
One of my favorite lines is a line from Barry Wam. They ask, like, what he'd like to be later on. He's like, oh, I'd like to be a hairdresser or two. Yeah. I'd like to be two hairdressers.
Yeah.
And the little epilogue thing at the end, we see he's actually become a hairdresser.
Yeah. He's found his calling. How about that? He's like, has this big old blonde bouffant. And also Dan Aykroyd's in this too. He plays like a guy, Brian Thigh, who didn't sign the Beatles because he thought like, you know, bands were on their way out and bands like that wouldn't make any more money. And, Eric Idle interviewed him saying, oh, so what's it like being such an asshole?
Yeah.
He's like, what?
Yeah, because there was like this record executive who infamously turned down the Beatles, and he said like guitar groups are on the way out.
Yeah.
And I mean, in hindsight, that looks pretty foolish.
Womp, womp.
You know, I mean, just like, you could have had the Beatles.
And you were like...
And you were like, no, I don't think anybody's going to like this.
Sticking with this Turtles band. whoever that guy signed or whatever.
Right. I mean, who knows?
And of course, there's another scene where they try to find the origins of the Beatles. Mm-hmm. So they went to New Orleans to find out how expensive it is to make these documentaries.
Yes. And so we went down to New Orleans to find out about the blues, which is black music played mainly by whites.
I love that line so much. I mean,
that's great. That's edgy. And they're talking to these old African-American character actors.
Oh, yeah. Like, Blind Lemon Pie.
Yeah.
One of the blues.
Yeah. And then he's like, oh, no, I was inspired to become a musician by the Ruddles.
Right.
Oh, you didn't get into music until later? And he's like, no, you ought to talk to Rutting Orange Peel. He's the guy. And then they talk to him, and he's like, oh, yeah, I inspired everything about the Ruddles. And then his wife is next to him, and she's just like, you're lying. Stop your lying.
He's always like, I always say, every time they make a documentary about, you know, some white musicians, they always come here, and he always takes credit for it. Took credit for the Everly Brothers. Took credit for Lawrence Welk.
Yeah. And then Eric Idle's interviewer, he just goes, well, it seems like this was a totally wasted trip. And he just goes, still, it's pretty, isn't it?
Yeah. I like the opening scene that where they said, like, oh, like, well, I'm standing here by the banks of the Mississippi, and he's by an actual bank, like the First National Bank. And then he realized, oh, wait, no, I probably meant to be in the other bank.
Yeah, the interviewer is a fun character because he just keeps making all these weird errors he's trying to, like, clarify what he's talking about, and he's not doing a very good job of it. He goes off on weird tangents, and it spoke to me. I relate to it. As
you don't say.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, it was great. And also about the there was one part I also liked in the when he interviewed the Blind Lemon Pie, the old blues singer. He said, like, yeah, no, I worked for the railroad. I was influenced by the Ruddles, so I went and became a musician, and I've been starving ever since.
Yes.
Just like quick little lines like that.
It's just very, very sharp writing throughout. And I love Neil Ennis's performance as,
he was
as
very
nasty to John Lennon.
He was very John Lennon-ish.
I feel like he should have gotten an Emmy nomination. Ooh. He is so funny. Yeah. In this movie.
He gets, like, the voice down just right.
He's got the mannerisms. He's got that John Lennon bite to him.
Yeah, he even kind of looks like him at some point.
Yeah, I mean, with the wigs and just the attitude, you really buy him. And he's I mean, most of this movie is Eric Idle and Neil Ennis. They're really carrying the movie on their shoulders.
Yeah,
and Neil Ennis is also credited as a co-writer.
Oh, really?
I don't want to minimize his contribution. Okay. Eric Idle gets a lot of credit for this, but I think Neil Ennis deserves an equal amount of credit.
Oh, wow.
For this movie. I mean, he's great. He's very, very funny. If you don't know who Neil Ennis is, he was in a group called the Bozo Dog Band, which was this
comedy. What a name!
It was this comedy group. And they actually appear in the Beatles movie Magical Mystery Tour.
Oh.
So he had, like, this weird Beatles connection.
Wow, a lot of direct Beatles connections.
I know, there's all this weird crossover between the Beatles and Python, and they were friendly with each other.
Yeah, I mean, I know George Harrison was definitely tight with the Monty Python folks.
Yeah, because he financed Life of Brian.
Right, absolutely.
I mean, Harrison was a big comedy fan. You know, he was a pretty funny guy. He had a nice dry wit.
Yeah,
too.
Very much. Like, so. I mean, like I said before, I am a huge Beatles fan. Like, I think earlier I kind of. Because, like, everybody said that they have their own guy. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I'm a Lennon guy. I'm a whatever guy. Like, I think I was a Paul McCartney guy. But, like, as I got older, it's like, no, Harrison is my guy.
Yeah?
Like, Harrison. I just like how he's just, like you say, he has that dry sense of humor. And, like, he was just very introspective. And, you know, it's...
Yeah.
There's something about Harrison. He was, like, very thoughtful. Like, I was like, no, that dude's my dude.
I like them all. I think if I had to choose, I would probably be a John Lennon guy.
Oh.
Yeah, because he's...
He's the rebellious one.
He's the just rebel.
Like,
he's
just like you.
Just like me. Just like me.
I'm a loner, daddy.
I'm a rebel. You don't want to get mixed up with a guy like me. But he's... Yeah, Lennon's just fun because he's just got this great wit. I love watching him in Hard Day's Night. Where he's just got, like, these little zingers.
Yeah,
and he just seemed like a witty guy. He might have been a bit of an ass in real life at times.
Yeah, I've heard some things.
Yeah,
things were third, but yeah, but
who among us hasn't been an ass at times?
Yes, we've all had our ass moments.
Yes, absolutely.
We've all assed out.
Yes. Huh? we actually also have Lorne Michaels in an acting role in this. He's a sleazy merchandiser. He's, like, early on, probably like 20 minutes in, he's this guy. He's like, oh, we're gonna do all this Ruddles merchandise,
but him.
He's not quite as recognizable because it's young Lorne Michaels.
Oh shit! I gotta go back.
He's not the silver fox of today.
Yeah, he's not that. He's like all brown and shabby on top.
Yeah, yeah. He's a little hippified still.
Yeah, doesn't have the snow on the roof.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, I gotta go back. That totally went by me.
That's a Lorne Michaels scene, baby.
Whoa, wee!
And he's trying to convince Leggy Mountbatten and about. You know, oh, we're going to do the Ruddles pillowcases and stuff. Yeah. All you have to do is say, we got a deal. And Leggy just goes, we've got a deal? And he's like, great!
Yes. And I got to go back. And another line I like that's because they kind of recreated the Shea Stadium.
Yeah.
Scene in, you know, from the Beatles, but uh-huh. here they call it Che Stadium.
Yeah.
Which of course is
Che.
Which of course was named after the Cuban guerrilla leader Che Stadium.
Yes. and it's interesting because like certain bits, certain sequences in the movie, they supplement with like real life Beatles footage. Like yes. they have real life footage of the fans freaking out. And stuff, and it really works because it makes the movie look like it's a higher budget production than it is.
Yeah,
it gives it a little more scope and all that. So the Beatles had to give them permission to use that footage, of course.
Of course.
And so did Apple. But
Apple.
It really worked. Okay. It's good and it's a good use. And it must have been difficult to find like. Footage of screaming fans that didn't have any signs that said Beatles.
Yeah, that's another thing I was thinking about too. Because like you'd have to because you can't really digitally take it out back then.
It was a pre-CGI age. It was 1978, baby.
That's right. Oh,
nothing. I mean,
I was like a year old when this came out. Holy, I literally was. I'm thinking about like, wow, I was just a baby.
I was 6 years old, but I was not hip enough to be watching. No, I would have been five. It was March of 78, so I would have been 5 years old.
Oh, wow.
They do have a shot of the Ed Sullivan theater, the marquee, and then there they changed it to, you know, tonight only the Ruddles.
Right.
And they show footage of the real Ed Sullivan.
Right. And of course they have him say the Ruddles.
And he's like badly redubbed. It's like so obviously a voice impersonator. He's like,
we hadn't perfected it.
Well, tonight we have some, you know, these young lads and we've never seen the fuss like them. Please welcome the Ruddles. It's that bad.
Exactly.
And you know, the lips movement don't match, of course, but it works because it's just a few seconds.
Right. I mean, but they recreated the, you know, the legendary Ed Sullivan performance pretty well. Like, you know,
yeah,
they bounced around and they sung Please Hold My... I think the song was Hold My Hand, which sounds a lot like All My Lovin'.
Yeah, and a little bit of like Please Me.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a lot of the songs, they sound almost like mashups between two or more Beatles songs.
Yeah, and very much so.
And like during the lawsuit that came about through whoever was holding the rights to the Beatles songs at the time, Neil Innes had to testify. He was like, no, I didn't listen to any Beatles songs when I was composing these. I just like worked on my memories.
Wow! Really?
Of the Beatles songs,
and that was all from memory.
Yeah, that's all the more impressive. I mean, I guess when you're a musician, you can pick stuff out like that.
Yeah,
like, you know, we do this Beatles type lick, and
yeah, I mean, I guess you have to have the ear for it.
And that's probably a better way to do it because that probably ensured that he didn't get too close.
Yeah. You know? Oh yeah, that makes sense. So you're not like totally copying off it. You're just
I mean, he wasn't trying to do it note by note, but it was still. Like a judgment went down. Some of the song credits read like Lennon, McCartney, Innes because they judged that some of them were like a little too close.
Wow.
So they're getting like the real life Beatles are getting chunks of those royalties from these parody songs.
So they're getting money off of parodies of their songs.
Yeah, that's amazing, right?
That's bonkers. I wonder, does that work for like when like Weird Al Yankovic does a parody? I guess not.
Well, he always gets permission from the artists.
Oh, I see.
I don't know how that works. I guess the original artist, because I mean he's using their music, not the actual recording, but he's using their music, and I think in some cases he tries to get the original musicians to duplicate the sound as closely as possible.
I guess.
Guess the original artist would get a chunk of that, but I'm not sure what all the legalities are.
Huh. Interesting. But, wow. I'm learning so much from this.
The world of parody is very interesting.
Weird Al just makes it look easy.
At the comic convention this weekend, I got to meet an artist, a writer and artist I love, Ty Templeton. He's a great, great cartoonist. You know, check him out if you're not aware of him. And he and David Gerald did this book. David Gerald is a writer primarily known for science fiction. He wrote the Trouble with Tribbles episode of Star Trek.
Ooh.
And the two of them, they did a Dr. Seuss Star Trek mashup parody thing called Oh, the Places You'll Boldly Go.
Okay.
So it's a Star Trek thing done in the style of Dr. Seuss. It's told in verse and it's drawn in a Dr. Seuss type style, and they just nail the look. And there are all sorts of fun references to the original Star Trek in there. And they got sued by the Dr. Seuss estate.
Whoa, all right.
And they won the first case. Because you know the judge is like, it's parody. You're allowed to do parody, and the Seuss estate is appealing. But it's and it's a shame because they have this book. They got like a dozen copies printed, but they're not allowed to sell any until this is
until
this is all sorted out. So it's just this big time suck and nuisance suit, and the Seuss people, of course, have like lots of lawyers and money, so they can drag this out. But
lawyers, guns, and money.
Yeah, the shit has hit the fan.
Yeah, you got
Warren Zevon.
You got that reference.
God. Love the Warren Zevon.
Son of a All right.
Yeah.
Well done, sir.
Send lawyer. I read a biography on Warren Zevon years ago, and you know that song, that lyric in Excitable Boy, where he rubbed the pot roast all over his chest.
Yeah, what that actually happened?
That actually happened. That comes from a real Warren Zevon.
Oh my God!
Holiday.
Somebody rub pork.
I believe Warren did that at some point.
Why did he do that?
I don't remember the context, but I was just
beauty
like,
regimen?
That's real. That was, Warren had his problems.
Who amongst us haven't rubbed beef on their chest?
Yeah, no.
Let he who has not rubbed.
And if you're gonna have a lyric from Excitable Boy be a real thing, that's the lyric
yeah.
Because there's a lyric later on that is quite problematic.
Yeah. Yes. It's been a while since I heard that song, but
yeah, there's a lyric in there, and it's he took this girl out on a date, and then he raped her, and he killed her, and he took her home.
Christ.
which I will admit, the very first time I heard that lyric in high school, I laughed hysterically because it was so dark and it was so over the top.
You're part of the problem, Trouble.
I really am. I really am.
My God.
I'm only partly proud of that, but damn, that struck me as funny the very first time I heard
it. I got to listen to that song again. I was like, oh, shit. Yeah.
That was probably one of the first bits of foreshadowing that I would someday become a comedian, that my sense of humor was that twisted in high school.
Like, oh, that's hilarious. Like, oh, boy.
Well, just the absurdity of, you know, he raped her and he killed her. That's not funny, but then he took her home. That makes it fun.
Yeah. That's something. Holy moly. What a tangent. Where are we with this now?
Warren Zevon. We got
Warren Zevon.
We could do a whole episode about Warren Zevon now.
I mean, if he has some SNL connection, we could.
He's probably guested on SNL at some point.
He must have at some point, right?
He was on Late Night with David Letterman a lot. Letterman loved him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember that. I remember when he was on, like, the final, when he was on, he knew he was dying. And, those episodes are...
Enjoy every sandwich.
That was some heavy shit.
We miss you, Warren.
Yes.
Rest in peace.
R.I.P. So what are we? Where are we?
Back to the Ruddles. There were some other SNL people in there we haven't mentioned yet. John Belushi shows up.
Rhonda Klein. Yes, that scene. I remember that scene being pretty hilarious.
Yeah, he's like this super
promoter.
Yeah, this super promoter, and he's like shady and fearsome, and they show. Belushi, he's in sunglasses and a white turtleneck.
White turtleneck sweater.
And he's flanked by
Franken and Davis,
and they're all in matching white turtleneck sweaters and sunglasses.
Yes, and he was like supposed to be this big, feared promoter. And he was walking into the office, people were just like freaking out around him, like literally like, oh, God, and like just in fear of him.
They're like killing themselves.
Yes.
Rather than face him.
People would rather commit suicide rather than meet him. And actually, they walk by an office and they show somebody like swinging from the ceiling.
Swinging from a noose, yeah.
Yes, and they say his only weak spot was dishonesty.
And then as he goes into his office, you see a guy in the background who's like crucified. He's like nailed to the wall.
Yeah, like, oh my God, this is such a dark scene.
And it's just shot around like the 30 Rock offices, I believe.
Oh, is that what that was?
Yeah, I believe so. I'm sure most of the SNL stuff was just shot in like an afternoon.
I could see that.
Because it's like everybody is in just one scene. So it's like real quick and dirty type stuff.
But yeah, I dug it.
Yeah. And there's a great scene where Belushi is talking about why they should trust him. Like, oh, I'd never do anything to hurt you. I care about you more than anyone else in the world. And the camera gradually pulls back and you realize he's talking to himself in the mirror. and they were just shooting the mirror like it was an actual close-up of him. Very funny scene. Very funny scene.
And they also talk about... they also do the whole Ravi Shankar Stig scene where Stig meets up with the Arthur Sultan.
Yes, yes. Which is like a parody of when they went to India to study with the Beatles went to India with right. to study with the Maharishi.
Right, right.
And they even allude to the rumors that the Maharishi was apparently doing acting inappropriately among right. some of the female students. Like Mia Farrow was like one of the people yes. who was there at the time.
I remember that.
And it was a sort of a Me Too yeah. thing in the making.
I mean, he wasn't murdering them and, you know, killing them and raping them and taking them home. But it wasn't great.
But yeah, he was having some, he was doing some not kosher yeah. stuff.
Little, yeah.
And they,
handsy.
They, their equivalent, the Arthur Sultan, he's literally dressed in a trench coat. Like, he looks like a flasher.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's like sort of subtly, and you see him like sort of like trying to get handsy with one of the female people there. One of the female students.
Yeah, that was rough. And also they talk about Leggy. I think they say mm-hmm. like how he, you know, when he wasn't able to make friends, like I think cause, yeah. like, he was on the downslide, and they yeah. say then at one point Leggy tragically took a teaching position in Australia.
Yeah, which was of course their parallel with Brian Epstein's death, which happened when the Beatles were in India.
Right.
And they have an interview with the Ruddles afterwards, and they're like, "How do you feel?" You know, they're like, "Well, we're shocked."
Yeah, we're shocked and shocked.
And stunned. Very stunned. Yeah. Did the Sultan have any words of wisdom for you? No. Oh, I mean, yes. Oh, well, yes, yeah, yeah. And then they just pan over to Barry Wam, and he just goes, stunned. it's very, very funny.
Not much to say.
And it, you know, it's a tricky thing because like here you have to find some equivalent for a real life person's real life death. And
yeah. Like how do you make comedy out of that?
Yeah, yeah. And it's tougher. Like there was a thing on the IMDb. It was talking about the real Beatles reactions to the movie, and like Paul McCartney disapproved at first. He relented.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he relented when he found out that Eric Idle grew up near Liverpool. So he was like, "Oh, he's one of us. He can make fun of us. He's not like an outsider." Ringo Starr liked the happier scenes in the film, but he felt the scenes that mimicked the sadder times hit too close. So you know, he's probably talking about the ending scenes when
the breakup,
the you know, Brian's death and the whole out of control stuff with Apple Corps.
Oh, yeah. We talk about, too, about Ruddle Corps. And, like, they were... Their whole scene was, like, they wanted to give people money and whatever they wanted.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
like, sure enough, they were losing money because people were literally coming in and taking whatever they wanted.
Right, and that's the scene we mentioned earlier with George Harrison and Michael Palin, where Harrison is interviewing Michael Palin, and he's like, oh, no, there's no problems at all. It's just a little bit of pilfering.
Yeah.
We'll get this all under control soon. And in the background, everyone, they're hauling literally everything out of the office. Yeah. People are just stealing everything.
Like typewriters, potted plants.
So they walk out with a stuffed bear.
And basically they say that they're losing money faster than the British government.
Yes, yes. And at the end, they literally steal the microphone out of George Harrison's hands.
Yeah. And then also they talk about how like there was a Hell's Angels squatting in mm-hmm. the basement, and like how, you know, Stig got hurt because he had the audacity to ask him to leave.
Yes.
And that's when they show Ron Wood as like a biker guy.
Yeah, like, yeah, he's like a punk rocker.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is it's kind of funny to see Ron, you know, yeah. one of the Rolling Stones made up as a punker.
Yeah, it's crazy. But yeah, so like not all the Beatles were I just assumed that all the Beatles have a great sense of humor. So I thought they were all cool with this. So
well, I think they all eventually I think they were all cool enough with it to allow it to be made. So
okay. But I didn't know, like, Paul disapproved of it. And, like, John was okay with it from the start?
Yeah, yeah. Well, Paul came around, and apparently his wife, Linda, always loved it.
Oh, nice.
So she probably maybe had some influence on Paul there, and he was like, well, you know, I guess it's okay. You know, Eric, he's from near Liverpool, so, yeah,
we can do that.
We can let him do that. Okay. That's all right. You know, he's just having a bit of fun.
And then what have you got?
Yeah. You know, and then what you going to do? Yeah. But apparently, yeah, so it sounds like Lennon and George Harrison were the ones who were most into it. I mean, Harrison to the point of making a cameo. Yeah. That's pretty exceptional.
If you're in the thing, you got to be okay with it.
You got a Beatle in your Beatles parody. That's It doesn't get much cooler than that, man.
Exactly. And I also like how they had the rumors that Stig died.
Yeah, that was interesting because, I mean, Stig is their George Harrison equivalent. Right. And, of course, in real life, it was Paul who had the rumors. And I wonder why they made that switch.
I don't know. But, they're saying, like, there was rumors of Stig dying in a flash fire in a waterbed factory.
Yes, yes. And when you played one of their songs backwards, it says Stig has been dead for ages, honestly.
Yeah. And like the reason that rumor was able to play out is because Stig hasn't come out and said anything about it, because Stig hasn't, he's a quiet one, so he hasn't said a word since 1966.
Yes, yes. So yeah, I was wrong earlier. They did comment on Stig never speaking.
Yeah,
so
yeah, they did.
I was wrong. I apologize, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, boy.
But other than that, they never comment.
Yeah.
On.
Yeah. Other than that, it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Yeah. 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 I went into Dennis Leary there.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, babe.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Babe. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey. All right, Chachi.
Yeah.
All right, Chacha.
Yeah, well, that was Dennis Miller there.
Yeah. Right. Oh, you didn't, Dennis.
I said Dennis Leary, and you said
I don't know why I thought Dennis. You said
we're
Dennis
mixing up our sarcastic Dennises.
Yeah, I know. We crossed Dennises.
Yeah. You never want to cross Dennis's. Yeah,
don't cross the Dennis's.
That's a rookie move.
Oof. Oh, boy. But, yeah, and then the movie goes on to their Let It Rot era, their Let It Be era, is where they're just losing money. Then that's when they do the performance on the rooftop of Get Up and Go, which we mentioned. You know, sound a lot like Get
and,
Back.
And that's one of the scenes where, like, Innes looks eerily like John Lennon. Like,
it really
the,
does.
He's in the wig. He's in the brown fur coat. He's got the granny glasses.
Yeah,
and
of course, then the performance ends in all the Beatles getting arrested.
Yeah,
because
they're
on a roof, much like Monty Python: The Holy Grail, where everybody gets arrested at the end.
Kind of, yeah.
Coincidence?
Kind of.
I don't know.
I don't think the Beatles actually got arrested in real life, did they? Wasn't it just the cops asked them to stop? Or?
Yeah, the cops. Yeah, because like they were up there, they didn't have a permit.
Yeah,
and like so the cops were like, "Yeah, I know you guys are the Beatles, but you know." Legally, you can't do this, so you got to shut it down. So
yeah.
The cops shut it down, and that was the last time all four of them ever performed together, ever.
Yeah, there was their last live concert. It was like this little mini concert. And
it was just like people on rooftops watching them. And like,
And of course, I'm sure none of them knew that would be the last time they played together in public.
That's true.
But speaking of the Beatles or the Ruddles getting arrested, they parody the Beatles getting arrested for drug charges in the middle 60s.
Oh, because of
instead
tea.
Of the Beatles getting into marijuana, all the Ruddles are into tea.
Yes, because Bob Dylan introduced them to tea.
Yeah, which is horribly controversial.
Yes.
And everyone's outraged about that.
No, I've had tea, you know, hibiscus and Earl Grey.
Yeah, I've even had them with biscuits. And it's just really funny because, like, Paul McCartney, he gave interviews where he's very matter of fact. He's like, "Well, yeah, I've smoked it. You know, you ask me a question, I'm going to answer honestly."
You really love doing this, Paul McCartney.
It's fun. It's fun imitating Paul McCartney. You know,
what have you got?
You know, and I've also listened to a lot of Dana Carvey on the Conan O'Brien podcast recently, and he imitates Paul a lot.
It's a fun accent to do.
It's just fun to be Liverpudlian. So
yeah, quick. Do you prefer the McCartney accent to do or the Adam Sandler impression?
I think Paul might be a little more fun, but you know, I mean, so every once in a while you like to go into a little Adam Sandler, you know. I mean, it's fun to do the Adam Sandler.
Oh, but you
yeah. But I mean, Adam Sandler's is gibberish.
It is. It's just like ibba dabble dooba dabble.
I mean, it's word jazz.
It's skibba da bop beep.
Yeah. How do you do?
Bozy bozy bop diddy bop.
Yes. I ain't got nobody. What was I talking about? I was talking about
even know anymore.
The Beatles, the Ruddles, they get into tea.
Yes.
And at one point, Nasty claims that they're bigger than Rod.
Yes, instead of God.
And everyone takes that as, he's bigger than God. And then it turns out, no, he was actually saying they're bigger than Rod Stewart.
Right, because the interviewer was hard of hearing.
Because the interviewer was hard of hearing, and Rod Stewart wouldn't be popular for another 8 years.
Yeah.
Which is just, of course, parody of John Lennon saying that, we're bigger than Jesus right now.
Right,
we're
absolutely
more popular than Jesus. And in the mid-60s, he probably wasn't wrong.
Yeah, it's one of those things, but back then, if you say, I mean, even now, if you say something like that, people want to, you know, burn you in effigy.
It was literally record burnings.
Yes,
after John Lennon said that, and he had to come out with an apology. And he was like, I didn't mean that we were bigger than or better than Jesus or any of that. I
was like, God is a thing. It's just like we're more well known than Jesus in pop culture. Mm-hmm, I guess he was referring to, but like it just got taken the wrong way, and people got all up in arms.
They got in a tizzy.
Yeah, they got their panties in a bunch.
But, you know, because they had all those Beatle burnings, I bet all those old Beatle records are a lot more valuable now.
Yeah.
There are a lot less of them around.
Yeah, that's very true. So I guess it helped in a way.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, the thing that amazes me about this movie is they really made it at just the right time.
Right.
Because it was still a couple years before John Lennon was murdered.
I was thinking that, too, because I was like, oh, is this, like, because I forgot that it's like John Lennon got murdered like in the
1980.
Yeah, 1980.
December 1980.
So I was thinking, oh wait, are they going to refer to John Lennon getting shot and killed in this movie? But I was like, oh no, this came out before, so John Lennon was still alive.
And they have the nasty character become a recluse.
Right. Oh yeah, at the end like the band breaks up and they go to each character.
I guess that was a parody of because John Lennon was still in his house husband phase at this point, where he like didn't make any music for like 5 years, I think it was, and he was just like, I'm going to be a husband to Yoko and a father to Sean, raise a kid and just enjoy living in New York City.
Yeah, so they had like nasty like shunning the public, and he's like kind of wheeling away in a wheelchair for some reason.
Yeah,
and he's like kind of just like you know, all like old manned out.
And Barry, as we said, became a hairdresser. And Dirk becomes a punk rocker.
Yeah, he formed a band called Punk Floyd.
Yeah, and he has a giant safety pin through his head.
Yeah.
Not through his nose, through his actual head.
I think he had the nose and the head.
Oh, yeah, he did.
He's punk rock all the way.
And he is hardcore.
Started a band with his wife. He sings and she doesn't.
Little shot at Linda there.
Yeah. I'm surprised Linda was cool with that. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Oh, and Stig, of course, worked at Air India as an air hostess.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Stig gets a sex change and becomes a woman.
Or he's at least in drag. They don't really say.
Yeah. He's just, came out of nowhere. I was like, huh?
It's just a quick shot of him. But I guess that's just a parody of how deep George Harrison went into all the Indian transcendentalism and the Indian sitar music and stuff like that.
Yeah. And at the very end, we have another SNL character. Gilda Radner comes and does an interview with Eric Idle's character.
Yeah. That's a great scene. That's just a great comedy scene. You can just pull that out of the movie. It works beautifully.
Yeah, yeah. So she was like a woman on the street, and he wants to interview her. At first, she's very reluctant.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gets very forceful, and then she kind of goes on this rant about, like, oh, yeah, of course I know who the Ruddles are. And then
it's
pretty funny. It's pretty hilarious.
It's great. She's just like, oh, no, I don't know who the Ruddles are. Tell me who the Ruddles are. I don't know who the Ruddles are. And he finally slaps her, and then she gives this whole long monologue about the Ruddles. It's like a Wikipedia entry.
Yeah. It's like, oh, wow. They
were four young mop tops from Liverpool, England, who blah, 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 blah. Yeah. They set the toes of the world to tapping with.
Yeah, it's what they're not, you know, four non-Jewish.
Non-Jewish.
Like, she just slipped that in. It's like, whoa, what?
It's just out of nowhere. Because that was very important that they were not Jewish, apparently.
Exactly. And at the end, of course, the interviewer, Eric Idle, he's on Shabby Road.
Yeah.
And like the camera pulls in,
mm-hmm.
and it pulls in really close, and it seems like, you know, the camera's like on a car, and of course the car kind of hits and runs into the interviewer, and at the very end of the interviews, in like bandages and in his legs in a cast because he got
he's interviewing Mick Jagger from his hospital bed.
Yeah,
and
I mean, obviously he's not, because like it seemed like the Mick Jagger stuff seemed like it was shot.
Yeah, I mean, because a lot of times, like when you're doing in-person interviews with somebody, you only have like one camera person, so they'll like shoot the camera they'll shoot the interview subject. You ever seen Broadcast News? This is like a plot point in Broadcast News.
I'm going to rent Broadcast News and That Thing You Do.
All right,
I'm going to do it.
That's your homework assignment for this week.
Yes, Professor.
They're good movies.
All right.
But they'll shoot the interviewer asking the question in cutaways later.
Right.
And in Broadcast News, that becomes like a plot point. I'm not going to get into it because it's kind of spoiler for the movie. But... Gotcha. Lost my train of thought. But yeah, so they show
Mick Jagger.
Yeah, he's interviewing Mick Jagger, and he's obviously not in the same place. Mick Jagger's not suddenly in the hospital.
Right.
Mick Jagger's in the same place, and suddenly the interviewer is in the hospital.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah, I noticed that too. But it's like, yeah, it was a funny way to end it. Just ended with Mick Jagger and.
Do you think they'll ever get back together? I hope not. And then just boom, that's it.
Then that's it, the end.
That's it. It's such a great parody.
It's a great parody. I mean, if you're a diehard SNL fan, I would recommend
or
it.
Or a Beatles fan.
Or a Monty Python fan.
There's so much good stuff in there.
Yeah. Some good stuff.
They have an animated sequence that spoofs the Yellow Submarine movie. And I think they even went to the same animators.
It looked really close to it. Call it Yellow Submarine Sandwich. That was a song called like Onions and Cheese or something. Cheese and Onions.
Here's an interesting bit of trivia about Cheese and Onions. On a Beatles bootleg, it was actually mistaken for a genuine John Lennon song.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was that good. Holy hell.
So it was misidentified as like, oh, this is like a lost John Lennon song. No, it's not.
It's the Ruttles.
It's the Ruttles, damn you.
You dumb twat. Or twat. Or I don't know. I forget that's what British people call
it. I think it's twat.
Twat?
Twat.
Or
yeah.
Twat? I don't know.
I don't think I've ever heard it pronounced twat.
Twat. Or prat? I don't know.
Yes. Yeah, you're thinking of prat.
If any of our British listeners are listening, call in. Let me know what I'm trying to say.
You think we have any British listeners?
Yeah, we might go across the pond.
Are we international?
I think I think so. Yeah,
that would be cool.
This travels. This tracks.
Okay. Okay, but I mean, check out the Ruttles.
Yeah, absolutely.
Watch the movie. Definitely get the soundtrack. The soundtrack is amazing.
The soundtrack is pretty top notch.
If you're any kind of Beatles fan, you want to hear some Beatles flavored songs. Check that out.
Yeah, like I actually, I was watching this movie and my wife was, walking around, watching me, and she was like, oh yeah, this stuff is kind of catchy. I think it was, I must be in love. That's a catchy little ditty.
It's a catchy song. Years ago, when I directed a play, a complete works of William Shakespeare, I had like some pre-show music and I put Goose Step Mama as the first.
Oh, nice.
Goose Step Mama on the cover charge. It's just a fun, peppy song. It gets people in the right frame of mind. And it's just, yeah. I love their parodies of the early Beatles stuff in particular. Yeah. I think they really did a nice job with those.
It's great stuff. So we put the word out on Twitter.
Yes.
About if you have any questions or anything to comment. We got some
responses on that?
We did. Good people at That Week in SNL said... Eric Idle's first hosting gig in season 2, which features a small bit of this movie, is arguably one of the best episodes of the show ever. At least it's one of my favorites. Also, any and all discussion of the Bonzo Dog Doodah band would be appreciated.
I mentioned the Bonzos briefly, yes.
Did you say Bonzo or Bozo? I thought you said Bozo.
I might have said Bozo. Ooh, I'm dumb.
Oh, boy. All right, also from Bill Brasky, fan of the show, he says... At Bill Brasky 2620 says, the joke in the trailer where Idol is giving a speech to the camera, and then the truck starts pulling away from him, and he has to run after it, was later ripped off, paid homage to, in Chris Rock's movie CB4, which is a mockumentary, like the Ruttles, about rap music.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Now, okay, I've never seen CB4.
Now you have to watch a movie.
I know. But I'm sure we'll cover that at some point because it's, Chris Rock.
Oh, yeah. Chris Elliott's in that movie, too.
Yeah. I know that Chris Rock said like he wanted to make the Spinal Tap for rap music in that.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. So. It's been a while since I've seen CB4. Like, I remember watching it, so it was all right.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to go back and, like, I'll re-appreciate it.
Yeah,
something.
We'll see if that's a buried gem.
Yeah, maybe. So.
Buried treasure.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll do that. All right.
We'll rediscover it.
Yes. Also, our fan of the show, Ruby the Rube, says, only tangentially related, but remember that weird time they did the dead parrot sketch on SNL and the crowd was oddly silent?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do remember that, and that was weird.
I remember that was like in the late 90s because it was like right after the TV ratings came in when they had the little rating... like TV PG at the corner of the screen when they brought that in. It was sometime in the late 90s, I think. Michael Palin and John Cleese, they did the parrot sketch pretty much word for word.
Yeah.
And
it got no applause. No,
Or it didn't get applause?
I don't know, it
didn't get laughs?
It didn't get laughs or applause. Like, it got applause at the end, but there were no laughs.
I think it was just
weird.
I think it was just like people were just so reverent, and they were like, the two of the Mighty Pythons are performing one of the classic sketches. We've got to catch every word.
Yeah.
I feel like it was probably that.
I guess.
But
I don't know.
I haven't watched that version in a long, long time.
It felt, I mean, to me, it felt like if you saw like Lynyrd Skynyrd do Freebird, mm-hmm. and like no one cared or no one applauded. It's like, this is like a classic sketch. What's wrong with you people? You make me sick.
So the parrot sketch is the free bird of comedy.
Free bird. Ah, see what I did there?
Oh, hey, look at that. A little hey bird now. Connection.
But and then somebody mentioned Cool Ranch for Life. Mentioned John Cleese said that the cast was mouthing the original skit backstage. I would probably do that, too.
Yeah. I mean, if the Pythons were performing that sketch in my presence...
Yeah,
I would probably just be like,
yeah, I'd have
like
a heart attack.
Too amazed to.
Yeah, I'd grab my heart like Fred Sanford.
Yeah, I mean, because the Pythons, they're comedy gods at this point.
Agreed.
I would love to see like somebody was bringing this up. I was listening to a slightly older episode of SNL After Party. They were going there. It was their pre-season 45 episode. And one of the guys was saying, like, we should have one of the Pythons host the show again before, you know, while they're still around.
Right.
Like, have John Cleese host the show. Or that was like what they called their pie in the sky idea.
Yeah.
But I was like, that would be so much fun.
Yeah. Why don't they have? It just seems to have, like, I mean, now they have, like, you know, people that draw in a younger audience. And, like, now it's like, I don't know if people are going to know who Eric Idle is. And it's like,
yeah. Go! I mean, it's too bad. Like, Eric Idle was one of those folks who came on the show a lot in the early days, in the early years. And
it's like, oh, young people ruin everything.
That was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun.
But yeah, then also, wow, a lot of people can comment on this.
My goodness.
The Quiz Monster said, yeah, that was unfortunate. They even had a hilarious new line to the rant. His metabolic process are a matter of interest only to historians. Which I like that line.
That's a great line. I mean, that's a classic sketch.
Yeah.
Then, that came out of, I believe it was Michael Palin trying to return a used car.
Oh, right.
And it was like, no matter what he would say, the salesman had an answer. It was like, well, the door flew off when I went over 20 miles an hour. And he's like, well, they do that, don't they? And I mean, that could have been a funny comedy sketch in its own. But the genius of the Pythons is they made it into something even more absurd.
Yeah.
And it's like returning a dead parrot. That's just inherently funny.
Yeah, like why would you return it? Just
it's
insane.
Well, it was sold to him as a dead parrot.
Yeah,
so obviously it's
want my money back.
Yeah,
come on. And Rubio went on to say, apparently the audience wasn't laughing because they were all mouthing along to the lines
mm-hmm.
for some reason. I doubt it, but I'm gonna assume it's true so I can feel better.
Well, like they did that when the Pythons were doing like live touring sometime in the 70s.
Right.
They weren't getting the laughs that they were expecting.
Oh.
And they looked out at the audience like through a hole in the curtain or something like that, and they saw like people mouthing the lines.
Interesting.
It was like they were at a rock concert and singing along with their favorite song.
Oh.
Like that's what the Pythons were by that point.
Wowee.
So they were like rock stars of comedy, man.
Again, Quiz Monster. Wow, this is weird. Quiz Monster says that would happen at a live Python show where the whole audience was there for Python, not SNL's greater NYC area crowd. The sketch was pretty late in the evening. Maybe they were tired or the musical guests had blown them away. Then Dennis Perrin goes on to say they should have done Cheese Shop instead. Then Jack Wilson said, or Spam. Spam.
Those are both good sketches. I think I like the parrot sketch better.
Parrot sketch is pretty legit. Let's see what else.
But Cheese Shop is good.
Yeah, and also Casey Killingsworth said, this movie is one of my favorite comedic parodies of anything ever. Screaming into the Void said, in all caps, what is your general opinion of Monty Python and the times they guessed it on SNL? JSMS, I don't know what that...
Yeah, I retweeted that and I just said, we're for them.
Yes, yeah. I'm all for it.
We're for them.
Anything and all things Python, I'm for.
I enjoy the Pythons. What's your favorite Python movie?
Ooh, shit. Oh.
For me, it's probably Holy Grail, but... Life of Brian is really good, too. That's only grown on me over the years.
I got to see Life of Brian again. I got to see Meaning of Life again. I haven't seen him in a while. But I would say...
Meaning of Life is a mixed bag. It doesn't work as well as really? It should. Yeah. There's good stuff in it, but it doesn't... It's not the Stone classic that those first two are.
I mean, I know And Now for Something completely different, just a collection of sketches.
Yeah, they reshot sketches that they'd done on the show.
Yeah.
I don't think they work quite as well.
Yeah,
I think the show versions are generally better.
I mean, I guess for movies, I would have to go Holy Grail. Just because that... The way they started it was interesting. Like, the way they had all the credits in the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
And then they had that little kind of running gag of the moose.
The subtitles.
Yeah, the subtitles. Oh, mind you, a moose bite can be quite...
Yeah.
Even that I'd never seen before, and that was weird.
The translators have been sacked. And,
yeah, and like that... Like, even that began, was like, what?
And then they finished the titles in a completely different style at the last minute.
Yeah, and then the movie ends with all of them just getting arrested, and then it just cuts away.
Yeah, it's an audacious comedy movie.
That was very jarring. Like, I'd never seen anything like that before. I was like, whoa, what the... Like, I was like, what just happened?
And there's, like, interesting trivia in that movie. They lost the rights to all the castles they were going to use at the last minute. So pretty much all the castle scenes are shot in different parts of one castle. That they got the permission to shoot at. They didn't have the budget to have actual horses, so that's how they came up with the coconuts.
Yeah, they don't even mention it. They just don't even bring it up.
It's so much funnier because it's never commented on.
Never. It's just a guy behind you hitting coconuts.
This is a world where you travel by hopping along, miming a horse, and someone with you has coconuts.
Yeah, I mean, just like, all right, I guess, and just go along for the ride. Just all of that is just like, I'd never seen anything like that before. It's just like, really, like... I was just seeing something totally new and like, wow.
Yeah.
I would go with Holy Grail.
Holy Grail's, and it's great as an introduction to Python. If you like Holy Grail, you will like Python.
Okay. And last comment from the Quiz Monster saying, one fact I didn't know until the actor had passed, Leggy Mountbatten was also the guy in Life of Brian who said, I'm Brian and so is my wife.
Oh, yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, that's what we got.
So, the Pythons worked with that actor a few times.
Yeah, very nice. And, I guess that's the episode, I guess.
That's about the episode. We did get, another...
Oh, right.
Review on the podcast. I got it right here. It's a 5-star review, so thank you very much. This is from Havtac, or is that Haytac? I can't quite...
I think it's Haytac?
Yeah, it's Haytac. Haytac. And the headline just says good.
Yeah.
So 5 stars and good.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah. So
that seems about right.
Those don't quite match, but
dude, it's 5 stars.
It's
let
five
it go,
stars.
Man.
We'll take it.
Let it go.
Says, love listen to two nerds with big bald bulbous heads, well versed in all things pop culture. Talk SNL.
Bulbous. Is he
got
like a
big bald bulbous heads?
Is he has a head fetish? Why would he say bulbous?
I don't know. I don't think either of us have bulbous heads.
I mean, my head's pretty big. I don't know if a bulb.
I don't know if I would say it's big. It's kind of round, but
thank you.
Yeah,
but yeah. I mean, I feel like I got to wear hats all the time. Like,
yeah, I don't know. I've never thought of myself as having a particularly bulbous head.
It's just an odd word.
Bulbous. Yeah. Wow, bulbous. No.
Now I have a complex.
Now we're going to fixate on that.
Thanks.
We got bulbous heads.
Thanks for the 5 stars and the head complex. You get.
Yeah, yeah. So thanks for that.
I'll be wearing wool hats everywhere like Mike Nesmith.
So, I mean, if you want to say more hurtful things about us and our heads.
Comment on all our body parts.
Yeah.
And give us 5-star reviews. Yeah.
Send that to us over on Twitter. That's SNL Nerds Show. On Twitter.
Yes, make fun of our noses, feet.
Yeah.
100 film of feet.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And also there was a cool thing that happened since our last show. Over on Instagram, Cecily Strong, as I suspected she would, she had a cool post about the dog court sketch that we enjoyed so much last week. And I made the comment there that I would like to see a regular segment on SNL which is just Cecily Strong plays with pugs.
Yes.
And she actually responded to that. Let me see if I can
find
that. Give me a moment.
Apparently we got a response. Oh, actually, well, while you look for that, I'll just give out my info. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Darren Credible, D-A-R-I-N Credible, website DarrenCredible.com. I'll be in Jersey City on the 30th. I'll be performing at... at Monty Hall in Jersey City for a WFMU show.
Oh, cool.
So I'll be doing like 5 minutes or so. So come out to that if you can.
All right, all right. So I found the response I got from Cicely because I tagged her in the comment. I said, she was talking about the dog court sketch and how much fun she had doing that. And I just said, this is why I say on Monday's SNL Nerds podcast that I want Cicely Strong Plays with Pugs to be a weekly feature. And then she responded, I'd honestly be very happy with that. And I said, I told her, please tell Lauren there's audience support for this idea. Let's make this happen.
So there you go. So we have a direct line to Cicely Strong. Now, we're pretty big deals.
Yeah, I was just very, very happy that for one shining moment, Cicely Strong knew who I was. Dude. And acknowledged my presence in the world.
I know. I mean, you guys are practically dating. Yeah, like that. Isn't that what happens when somebody responds to you online? That's like
How it works.
That's,
yeah.
Is it not?
No. No. Yeah.
I don't. All right. I don't know how the internet works.
But no. Yeah. It's always fun. You're always like, hey, cool. This person responded.
Yeah. That is pretty neat.
It's a neat little fun charge.
Yeah.
Did I give my Twitter? I didn't give my Twitter.
No, you did not.
You can respond or you can find me on Twitter at Trumbull Comic.
Yes.
And that's let's see. Is it? We should mention the Patreon, non-pro.
Yes, Patreon at non-productive.
Non-productive.
Non-productive.com. Give us money, please, for more of this kick-ass content. You can listen to other shows on the non-productive network. We got a whole heap of them. We got you know, books about Near Mint and the Honeymooners podcast.
Yeah.
Shows about comic books and all types of geeky nerdery.
Yes, yes. Check out the other shows in our network. They're fun.
Yeah, and next episode we're going to talk about the episode that comes on the 26th with Chance the Rapper, musical guesting and guest hosting.
Ooh.
Yeah. I think this is like the second or third time he's been on the show. So
he's been on as a musical guest before, but...
Yes, he has. I think, but...
Never hosted.
I think he hosted. Didn't he?
Did he host?
Huh.
Well, now we gotta look this up.
That's something we should know.
Okay.
That's something I should have looked up on before I got here and did not.
Well, you know what? We'll figure this out before
next week. We'll figure
it
all out.
And we'll get into that then, because we're running a little long already. So
oh, really?
Until then, until next week, nerds out.
This has been a non-productive media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.